Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, good evening, everybody. Mr. Batson has been delayed tonight. We're not sure what the reason is, but well, hopefully he'll show up here in just a few minutes. We'll go ahead and get started with the world animal news tonight. Good evening, I'm Dr. Day. We're going to start out tonight in Anchorage, Alaska, where a stretch of the Turnagain Arm Trail has been closed after a bear charged three people, state officials said. Now the stretch between Potter and McHugh Creek Trails has been closed. Officials said the brown bear might have been injured by gunfire Sunday after it charged three people that were just about 100 yards off of the trail there. This time of the year, the bears are mating. You never know what they're going to do. So if you're out in the wild, just be aware that at any time it could happen. Well, we're hoping that everything's okay with Mr. Batson tonight. I know that Cher, Mrs. Batson, has been out of town for a while. And he had to pick her up today at the airport, and hopefully everything went good there. And hopefully everything's good there at the Wildlife Preserve. They do have a lot of wild animals there, so there's always anything could happen. You know, you're dealing with that many creatures. Let's see, I could name all of them for you, but that would take a while. But anyway, we're going to go on to the next story with the World Animal News, starting out with New Orleans, Louisiana. The State Marine Mammal and Sea Turtle Rescue Program said that a sick dolphin rescued from the Gulf of Mexico in June is now in good shape and getting much better. Audubon Aquarium spokeswoman Megan Calhoun said that the male weighed about 232 pounds when it was stranded June 19th at Rutherford Beach and now weighs 270 pounds and is gaining more weight each day. No release date has been set yet, but hopefully sometime here in the near future. Now, if you think about it, if you're out on the beach yourself, somebody will come and rescue you, pull you in, feed you, look you up, put some pounds on you, turn you loose a little bit later. Sounds like a pretty good deal to me. All right, now here's a really interesting story from Tanzania. Near extinct toad returns. What do the Bronx, Toledo, and Dar es Salaam have in common? Well, at least one thing is a population of the world's rarest amphibians. The tiny Kahanzi spray toad, which officially became extinct last year in Tanzania's Kahanzi Gorge. The toad was first discovered in 1996. In a microhabitat created by the spray of the nearby waterfalls in the Kihanzi Gorge. 3 years later, a hydroelectric dam vital to the Tanzanian economy was built there, drastically reducing the mist zone in which the little tiny toads live. In 2009, they were declared extinct in the wild. But the good news is that before they became extinct, an insurance colony of almost 500 toads was taken from the gorge and sent to zoos for breeding. On Thursday last week, 100 of the toads from two different zoos, the Bronx Zoo in New York and 50 from the Toledo Zoo in Ohio, touched down in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and were moved into a new state-of-the-art propagation center. And there you go again. Beach yourself or become nearly extinct and they'll send you to a propagation center. Tanzanian government is working to install a series of sprinklers in the gorge region to allow these species to return to their natural habitat. Now, isn't that pretty nice? All right, Boston, Massachusetts. The Franklin Zoo announced that Kiki, one of the four female western lowland gorillas at the zoo, is pregnant with her third child. The baby is due sometime in the fall, and the zoo officials said they plan to hold a three-day baby shower next month to collect items from a nonprofit agency that provides assistance to new and expectant human parents. Now, isn't that nice? Naples, Florida. Residents want the state to relocate nearby panthers that they said have killed at least 11 animals this year. The wildlife officials said that is not possible because moving the panthers would put too much strains on the endangered species. And there are, they say, about 100 Florida panthers that live there now, but you know, it's pretty hard to count animals like that, so there could be a few hundred, but hopefully not less. All right, off to Islip, New York. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. The town board passed a resolution that requires live poultry to be kept in enclosures rather than allowed to run free in the backyards where they can escape. Now, the residents in the College Woods neighborhood of Central Islip have complained about the fowls wandering into the yards and streets, and they're afraid they're going to get hurt. But with the big egg recall right now, you could have some of those chickens wandering in your yard. Okay, we're going to Muskegon, Michigan. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is poisoning Muskegon River tributaries in the coming days to rid them of larvae from the invasive sea lamprey. The aim is to attack larvae burrowed into the sea bottoms of the Cedar Creek and the Brooks Creek. Adult sea lampreys are eel-like parasites that attach themselves to fish. They're kind of like leeches with really large mouth and a little razor-like teeth that just basically cut big holes into the salmon and the trout and, well, pretty much whatever they can grab a hold of. All right, we're going to head off to Tanicomo, Missouri. Oxygen levels in the cold water rushing through the power-generating turbines at the Table Rock Dam are so low that trout fishing downstream is in danger, state officials said. Now, the Conservation Department biologist Shane Bush said that the fish need at least 6 parts per million to thrive. In the fall, oxygen levels, because of the heat, can fall down to like 2 parts per million. Okay, off to New York. Bed bugs have attacked a popular movie theater in the Times Square area as New York battles the persistent pests. AMC Empire 25 has sprayed overnight and reopened Wednesday, spokesman Justin Scott said. All of the AMC theaters in Manhattan have been infected, and the chain takes early reports seriously about these bed bugs. They're getting serious about them. Bed bugs have also been found in several New York stores. City officials have instituted plans to fight the infestations. Well, everybody's having that problem across the United States. There's a little bit of that here and there. Okay, now here's some bad news. Massive coral destruction off of Indonesia. Searing summer temperatures have devastated coral reefs off of the Indonesia's coast, a Wildlife Conservation Society team reported Monday. According to the researchers, more than 60% of the Andaman sea corals off of Sumatra have been bleached, which is a whitening that occurs when the algae supporting the reefs die off. This is a tragedy not only for some of the world's most biodiverse coral reefs, but also for the people in the region, because They depend on the reefs for their fishing. Now, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration measures indicate that seawater temperatures are expected to exceed a temperature of 93 degrees in May and about 7 degrees warmer than normal for the region. All right, let's run off to Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Two insects are attacking trees across the north, turning leaves brown. The State Department of Natural Resources said that an aspen blotch miner caterpillar is attacking the aspen trees, and an Adler flea beetle is going after the Adler trees. The aspen infestation runs from St. Croix River to Oneida County. The Adler infestations from Washburn to Langlade counties. So little tiny bugs everywhere. All right, well, I hope the Batsons are okay tonight. I know that they do have a couple of phones to use in case of emergencies, but I have no explanation for tonight. So we're just going to keep on going with more animal news. Now, Larry is going to be sad about this story because this is a very good acquaintance of him, and we've been hoping to maybe get her on the show and for a little of Betty White entertainment. Well, here's the story. Two books by Betty White will soon be coming to a bookstore near you. The Golden Girl is writing about life, love, sex, and celebrity. The Emmy Award-winning actress has been enjoying a resurgence in the spotlight in the last few years. We'll write a few books for G.P. Putnam Sons. In the first, Listen Up, set for release in the spring, White will share her life lessons that she's learned over her decade-long journey in Hollywood, with an emphasis on the last 15 years of her life. The second book, The Zoo and I, Biddy and Her Friends, due in 2012, showcases White, the animal lover. It will be filled with stories and photographs capturing the daily life of her animal friends at the zoo. And for a lot of people who don't know, Betty White is a longtime member of the board of the Los Angeles Zoo. And Larry has met her a couple of times, and great lady, just if you're ever at his house, there are pictures of Larry and Betty White, and Larry's a big fan. Okay, well, let's see, what are we going to head to now? We'll just kind of keep the animal news going here for a few more minutes, and if not, we just might have to give up and go home.
Now, why would you want to do that?
Larry's Mr. right there. Bassett.
Now, sorry about my delay tonight. So, have we covered the Wild World news, Henry?
We're just ending up. I just did a Betty White story for you. You just missed it.
We love Betty White.
Well, she wasn't actually here. It was actually me. But everything okay at the Wildlife Preserve?
Oh, we just ran a little behind tonight. Sorry about that. Sorry to all of our listeners all across North America. This is Larry Batson. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Glad everybody can be here tonight. And we want to thank Eric Altman for manning the controls and probably helping out there at the start. Huh, Eric?
Yep. My pleasure, Larry. Always happy to help out.
So I'm really sorry I missed the start of the program, but we've got a great guest tonight. Are you finished with your Wild World News, Henry?
Yeah, we're finished up right now.
We want to remind everyone that the Wild World News is underwritten by Jet Kaiser Films. If you've got a documentary in mind or anything concerning HD video, Jet Kaiser is the guy you want to talk to. His website, jetkaiser.com, and he has all the information on doing that. We want to thank him for underwriting the Wild World News. We also want to thank our other underwriters to make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio, such as We Want You Cottages way up in western New York, Chautauqua Lake. Their website, wewantyou.com, and also they have a very exciting new website called iKids Fishing, and it's all about kids fishing and that big whopper they catch, they can download that picture and compare it to fisher, young anglers all across North America. And that's at wewantshoe.com. Also, coming up in a couple weeks, one of our underwriters, Michael Hodges, he's the proprietor of McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, right on the edge of Rocky Mountain National Park, folks. I'm telling you right now, if you stay there, you might have bighorn sheep and elk right in your own backyard. A beautiful facility, lots of cabins. And think about that year-round, even in the wintertime. That's a great place to visit. That's McGregor Mountain Lodge. Their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And their 800 number is 1-800-835-8439. And also a big thank you to Santee Cooper Country down in beautiful South Carolina. Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as the Santee Cooper Lakes, cover over 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. It's a fisherman's paradise. I'm talking big fish, big catfish, anywhere from 20 to 100 pounds they bring in out of those waters. Here's the number you want to call, 1-800-227-8510. The girls will set up your reservation, organize the guides, everything you need to go fishing. It's all down there at Santee Cooper. And also check out that website, SanteeCooperCountry.org, and has all the new things going on here with the fishing and so forth. We've got a great guest tonight. I've known him for several years. In fact, many of our big cats that we've had as a part of our program, or our school programs over the year, have come through this gentleman who lives in Flat Rock, Indiana, not far from Shelbyville. He's also part of the Animal Planet documentary, Tiger Next Door, Dennis Hill. Good evening, Dennis.
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
Well, I've done better. We got to run a little bit
behind.
You've
been better?
Yeah, but we're back under control again. I see it's 10:16 here in the tropics of Indiana. So what's been going on with Dennis Hill?
Well, pretty much the same old thing, Larry. Just, taking care of tigers and questions about animals and playing some guitar here and there and, pretty much the same old thing.
When did you start your working with animals? What started your interest?
Well, of course, probably when I was 2 or 3 years old. I grew up out in the country as a country boy. I grew up on a farm, and I was just, fascinated by them, just meant to be. Had all the pretty much indigenous animals to Indiana as pets, and it was all I had.
So you had a patient mom, huh?
At most of the time, she did get sprayed by a couple of baby pet skunks, and, and my raccoons got out and killed a bunch of her fancy chickens, but actually she doesn't know that because at the time I threw them over in the cornfield so she wouldn't see them, and I've never told her that one, so, we'll leave it at that.
Well, hopefully she's not listening tonight.
Well, I'm not sure. I guess I'll know tomorrow or later tonight about that.
That's so you started working with, what was your first exotic animals and what brought that all about?
Well, my first exotic animal was Marcy, of course, the cougar. And being fascinated with animals around Indiana, I've seen a person that had a pet cougar, and it just overwhelmed me, and I just had to get one. And Marcy, I got her, and I had her for 21 years. But that was my first, and since then, gosh, I've seen them all. The bears, jaguars, leopards, servals, caracals, Siberian lynx, caracal lynx. It's hard to just focus on one species when you're so fascinated with them.
You were just said a few moments ago about a pet cougar. We kind of have trouble putting those two words together because, as you know,
right, exactly.
With any wild animal, and it's just not anybody or everybody can take on that responsibility and what's involved with it.
Well, the wording has kind of evolved through the years. Back then, it was a pet, but many people came and went with a lot of pets like that, and it's arrived to where it is today that you actually know they aren't pets. And people like you and me that do have those animals, actually, we try to portray them as ambassadors to their species, to whereas we can show those to people today and let them see for themselves that they aren't pets, and, you know, in the perspective that we own them or have them.
It's, it's kind of a double-edged sword. We, as you have, kept animals for many, many years, and you try to tell people that they shouldn't really have them, and then, you know, you do, and people say, well, you have them, you know, what makes you different? Well, handling wild animals is basically I don't know how to put this, it's in your bloodlines. Because not, as you know, not
yeah.
everybody has that capability. It's kind of like, I can remember for many, many years working with primates, and I've always heard after the fact that when I've talked to quote-unquote professionals, they say, well, primates are always, or sometimes the toughest and most difficult of all the animals to work with, and I never really thought that until I had an opportunity. We had our baboon. We had a Hamadryas baboon that was, we'd had for 25 years, and I was over at the National Conservation Training Center in West Virginia, and one of the gentlemen was there, was from the Miami Zoo, and he had brought a cheetah to present for the open house that year, and we didn't really have a chance to talk before the program because it was kind of a complicated deal. Jim Fowler was there, and he was going to use the cheetah as part of his presentation, but of course I had animals as well, and as you know, you can't intermingle the different animals, even though guys like Jack Hanna think you can, but you can't. So we didn't really have a chance to talk before the program, and after the program was all over and all the animals were put away and so forth, and he came up to me and he says, you know, he says, you're either good or you're crazy. I go, why is that? He says, that baboon. And I said, why? He says, well, he said, well, then I invited him to come to our animal truck and have a chance to get a closer look at her. And he says, oh, you don't understand. I have no interest. He says, I was in Africa, and two land rovers pulled up on a troop of baboons, and one of the male baboons climbed up in the other land rover and basically bit this guy in the throat. And he said, I don't know whether the fellow lived or died. They hurried up and put a tourniquet on his throat and hauled him off to the closest hospital. And he said, ever since I had a chance to see, I saw that, he says, I want nothing to do with baboons. And another friend of mine said one day, he says, he told my wife Cheryl, he says, you know, he says, monkey, he says, I'll work with Larry. He says, work with any kind of animals, but not monkeys, because he said, in his own words, a monkey will bite your face off. And I thought all those years that I've been working with him, I didn't even think anything about it, you know, until years later when I talked to, like I say, professionals. And they just went on and on about working with primates. I don't know how to say it. It is definitely in your blood, and you really have to want to do it. How many cats do you have on hand right now, Dennis?
I just got 5 at the house right now. We got the 3 whites and 2 golden tabbies.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got through. We had some other cats down in Henryville that are a couple generations my tigers, and they have babies, and we had taken those babies and hand-raised those and just temporarily handed those back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, less is more with this. I mean, manageability is a big factor with it, the way things are out there today.
What's involved?
You know,
go ahead.
Basically, you know, my situation, I've tried to concentrate on gene pools, you know, the rare color gene pools and things like that. Also, to try and harness some certain temperaments, a mild temperament, you know, so you can interact. I mean, you get what you give with them, and you just, you know, you got to be able to interact as best as you can with them. It's just a lot of different things.
For our listeners at home, what's actually involved? Now, when a tiger's born, how big is it? Tell our listeners.
Well, a baby tiger, I think they weigh around probably 240 grams. If they've all seen baby domestic kittens, you know, they vary in size, but I would say probably a baby tiger, you know, is about probably 1 3/4 that size. They're almost like small Doberman puppies, so to speak.
Right,
but, you know,
right.
Also, I mean, those sizes can differ in NCA, too. But I know there for a while I was documenting weights, and I think, like I said, around 240 grams is about the weight of a, you know, it can vary probably all the way up to 450 grams as far as that goes. But that's about, you know, somewhat of an average.
So what's actually involved on your day-to-day procedure on raising a tiger? Because basically you take them away from their parents at what age?
Well, it depends on the mother. You know, basically some mothers will raise their young, you know, at worst, 9 days old. We'll take them at 9 days old and try to create that bond. But, you know, some new mothers will lay on their babies. And, you know, if I think that's the case, you can usually tell just hours after. But, you know, I've taken some kittens at 5 minutes old and just went from there, you know, hand-raised them. It's a, you know, the bond issue is a kind of a priority. You want to create a special bond with those animals so that you can interact with them. And if you can interact with them, that makes a greater quality of life for them, because you can interact rather than be on the other side of the fence, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So, for the people at home that raised a kitten, what's the difference between just raising a kitten from just a few hours old to raising a tiger?
Well, raising a tiger, I mean, basically, you know, as usual, you've got to hand feed it about every 2 to 4 hours round the clock. There's no options, no left or rights, you know, and probably, you know, you also have to stimulate them. That means take a warm rag and rub their genitals, get them to go to the bathroom, you know, and they respond to that. You know, they respond to that. And also you rub them in a certain manner, like the mother cat would lick her babies, and they recognize that. Their instinct is so out in front that they recognize just certain things. And also, you know, at probably 3 weeks, 4 weeks of age, you're already wanting to wear a welding glove when you feed these kittens, because their claws and their feeding manner is such a frenzy, you know. But they're so darling. I mean, there's nothing like it in the world, you know, to see that degree of innocence that they have, you know. And they're so majestic. I mean, you know, you and I see it all the time, Larry. I mean, people want these animals, and we understand why. I mean, they're so beautiful, and people are drawn to tigers especially. But, you know, you raise it up. You know, after, say, 6, 8, 10 weeks, you know, they're starting to grow pretty good. 3, 4 months, you know, I mean, I've had tigers in the house till 5, 6 months of age, you know, but you just kind of, you got to try to twist that instinct to, you know, a lifestyle, a safe lifestyle, which when that cat gets bigger, that you're going to be able to interact with it. But, you know, 8, 10 months, that cat, you know, a basic Bengal is, you know, 100, 150 pounds, and it needs to be in a very nice cage, you know, outside, out of the house.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and they love to play, you know. They're just so playful, you know, and the cat can innocently scratch you or bite you pretty good, you know, and
right.
And just not mean to. You know, all of a sudden the cat bites you and then gets that blood taste, and the instinct takes over, and you're trying to pull away because you're getting bit and it hurts, and the instinct is setting in, and the animal is thinking it's the kill, and it's pulling away. So what do? They bite harder and deeper, and, you know. So basically, all my cats, I try to bring them up under two words, basically, and that is, no bite. You know?
Yeah.
No bite.
Very important, very important. We're going to take a break here. We've got some PSAs we're going to do, folks. This is Larry Batson. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio with Dennis Hill. We'll do these PSAs. We'll be back in just a few moments right here on Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
There are some visitors you'd just rather not see. Like your obnoxious brother-in-law, Louie.
Hey, everybody, we're here. It's good to see you. When do we eat?
But then there are some visitors you just can't get enough of. To make your farm or ranch a more attractive place for the visitors you actually want to see, contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office. They can help you build the habitat wildlife loves. But as for Louie, try disconnecting the doorbell. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE to schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Good evening, everyone. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. I want to apologize to all of our listeners at the start of the program. I had an unexpected delay, so we're here. I want to tell everyone in the upcoming weeks that next week on the program, head vet to the Buffalo Zoo, Dr. Kurt Voley, is going to be on. We're going to be talking about his recent trip to Mongolia and also some of the activities going on at the Buffalo Zoo up in Buffalo, New York. And on September 2nd, that Thursday, that's going to be a very special evening. It's going to be kind of away from what we normally do, but there's a gentleman that works for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. His name is Mark Chesna, and he is the world's greatest sports fan. I'm going to tell you, you're going to be absolutely amazed. In fact, with the recent return of Brett Favre to the Minnesota Vikings, he is Brett Favre's number one. He flies all over the country to various games and watches Brett Favre. Well, I'm just going to tell you, because it's going to be the start of football season. He's going to be on. It's going to be, you're going to be amazed. The man has been over 2,500 events in person. NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball. Oh, it's incredible. But he's going to be on the 2nd. Then we're going to return to Michael Hodges for the big mountaineer from Estes Park, Colorado. And we're going to talk about his recent exploits in Rocky Mountain National Park. And then on the 16th, Donna Shaver, she's the foremost authority on the Ridley Sea Turtle. And we're going to talk to her from Padre Island, Texas, and her big rescue operation down there and the things that are involved. We also want to remind everyone that we're underwritten by We Want You Cottages way up in western New York, Chautauqua Lake. Peter and Kathy Weimer, they're the proprietors. And here's that number, 716-789-3383, and our website, wewantyou.com, WEWANCHU.com. Plan a fall fishing trip up there and get into those northerns and smallmouths. I don't know if the muskie season will still be in or not, but it's a great place to go fishing. Also, that website, iKids Fishing, where the youngsters can download the picture of that big whopper they just caught. Also, a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge in Estes Park, Colorado, right on the edge of Rocky Mountain National Park. And their website is info@McGregorMountainLodge.com, and their 800 number is 1-800-835-8439. And also a big thank you to Santee Cooper Country down in beautiful South Carolina. Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as the Santee Cooper Lakes, they cover 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. It's world-class fishing, 7-state record, 1 world record. That website is www.santeecoopercountry.org. Or give them a call. They'll make all the reservations, your guides, your motel, everything. 1-800-227-8510. Tonight on the program, longtime friend, fellow wildlife enthusiast. Also, he was the feature of the documentary for Animal Planet, A Tiger Next Door. Dennis Hill from Flat Rock, Indiana. Dennis, great to have you on the program tonight. I know we were talking a little bit about raising tigers. Let's get into this documentary that was Animal Planet did with you. And I know a lot of our listeners had a chance to see it. And tell us a little bit about behind the scenes, what was involved making that.
Well, basically, it was a producer from New York that called me up, and the problem I was having with DNR and had made news, and she wanted to come down and do some filming, and I said, yeah, that was fine, because I was trying to get a message out of my own about the way different agencies treat the public out there. And basically, I let her come down, Camilla Calamandri of New York, and she shot, I don't know, footage for probably 3 years, 4 years, and she had an agenda of her own. She was out to get people that would raise animals and sell them. She didn't believe in that, but mm-hmm. you know, she basically. The story, they pieced it together. I mean, it's not the real story. There's so much that went on. She just used parts and pieces to try to create whatever and edit it and put it together and sell it. But,
Were you happy with the finished product? Were you happy with the finished product, or what did you think?
Well, no. I mean, on the Animal Planet, they left a lot of that out. They were out to get me that was raising baby tigers, you know, and actually I haven't raised that many and put that many out in the world, and they all went to good homes. You know, there's a lot of speculation, a lot of read between the lines, and, you know, many times I've said that, you know, as kids we've got our own coloring books and we can color any way we want. We can color outside the lines, and basically this documentary is just one producer's coloring book. That's pretty much all it is, you know. I mean, the story is way too deep and complicated, you know. I know it all. I lived the story, you know. And basically, I just stood up for people trying to raise exotics, you know. I mean, you know what it's like out there. I don't care if you wear red tennis shoes. Somebody's got an opinion about it, and they may not like them. So, you know, it covers a lot of different situations, but. No, I wasn't real happy about it, but, you know, it's, you know, I could live without it for sure.
Did you get a lot of feedback after it was aired?
Oh, yeah. People call me from all over the world sticking up for me. You know, they send letters. You know, they say, keep on doing what you're doing. They can read between the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Even what's in that movie right now, people can read between the lines, and they know what's what. You know, it's
right.
Just, but there's much more to it than that. And I don't know, it's a tough world out there. That's just the way it is.
I can remember the first time that we were USDA licensed, the United States Department of Agriculture, and our inspectors came out. And this was in 77, 78, I believe. And basically, we had to tell the inspectors how to spell lion for the paperwork. I mean, that was beginning.
They've got it all down to science. It's like they speculate, you know, saying, oh, this animal looks unhappy. There's a nail 10 feet up there in the cage. I think it could jump up there and poke its eye out. We're going to write you up for this and that. Oh, but, you know, you could pay a small fine here. And, you know, I mean, it's just,
There has to be some type of, I don't know, overseer, basically. I mean, but sometimes it's from one extreme to the other. And some of the rules are made by people that really do not maintain and take care of wild animals, or never have.
Right. I couldn't tell a lion, wouldn't know a tiger from a lion.
Well, yeah.
You know.
That's it, exactly. And what's actually involved with...
The problems that happen, you know, I mean, people are actually killed by tigers. There's a lot of stupid stuff that's going on out there in the world. We both know it. We've heard about it. You know, people getting killed by tigers or anything else in that perspective. But things have happened, and it makes it tough on the rest of the world, you know, that's trying to do it right. I mean, you know, they try to accuse me. Convict me of having a tiger or anything get out, you know, and in 25 years I've never had an escape. No one has ever been hurt, you know, but golly, they can sure sit there and speculate, well, you know, if these cats get out, you know, well, they never have gotten out, you know.
Right.
It's just, you know, everybody's a tiger expert except me. When it comes to, you know, all these other people, everybody knows everything about them except me.
Well, I think
I don't know
what Jim Fowler had to say about this. Of course, we're very conscious because we realize that for the animal lecture, how important that is, and basically the laws that keep getting tighter and tighter with incidents that happen, for instance, like the chimp attack up in Connecticut. And as you mentioned,
right.
You know, even Siegfried and Roy's event that happened in Las Vegas.
That drifted
back to us. In fact, and even here recently,
right. The
killer whale that killed that keeper in SeaWorld.
Right.
You know,
right.
Everybody was on the bandwagon and said, well, should these shows continue? Should they go on? Well, you know, they've done thousands and thousands of these shows. And they have one incident like this, and there's people that say, we need to shut this down. You know, killer whales shouldn't be kept in captivity. But, you know, for instance, with the tigers, you know, they say, well, take the tigers and release them. That's not the problem. The problem is the natural habitat. There's not enough. They're saying now in India that there's probably, roughly around 2,000 tigers. Well, there'd be more tigers if there was more forest. Because if you give them a forest, the animals will survive.
Right. And we're the blame. I mean, you know, take more of the
absolutely.
Forest. I mean, you know, the USDA used to come around. I'd mess with them. I'd go, you guys do know the world's most dangerous animal, you know. And they'd sit there and look at each other and they'd say, the elephant. I go, no, it's human, the man.
Yeah.
You know, we are the world's most dangerous animal, there's no doubt.
Oh, right. We're the only ones beside ants that plot wars against one another and kill for the sake of killing. At least with the natural world, even your toughest predators, such as the Siberian tiger or the Kodiak bear, they you know, if they're not hungry, there's no killing that. It's not just
right.
The sake of killing.
Animals are innocent. There is no doubt about it. Animals are innocent.
And in fact, we even came up with the analogy, you know, they were talking about things that we should really be concerned about. Well, as Jim Fowler said, we should be concerned anybody that has a lawnmower, because there are more people injured or killed by power lawnmowers, riding mowers, whatever, push mowers, each year than any animal. Any. I mean,
exactly.
Tens of thousands. Then when we won't even get into the dogs, and of course you run into the same old thing with the breeds such as your, commonly called pit bulls. I don't like to use that name. But right away they say these are all bad. Well, I said, well, it's not the dog. And I think Caesar
right.
from the Dog Whisperers has pretty much put that out the light. It's the handler, it's the person that owns the animal. That's what's the problem. It's not the,
right. The first. I mean, you get what you give, and you can. I mean, you've seen it at my house, Larry. I mean, you can raise dogs up with tigers. You can bring a lot of different species together. I mean, you get what you give. I mean, with the dogs, people are bringing them up all in the wrong way. It's an ego thing. I mean, you find so many factors involved with these people that are bringing up animals, you know. And there is a lot of egomaniacs out there in that respect.
Well, there is, and it's just like a little guy owns a big truck, and it's absolutely. It's a lot of testosterone. In fact, when we were talking about raising animals together, I think one of the most amazing things that I ever saw was in California. One of the trips to do Johnny Carson with Jim Fowler, and we went to the ranch of George Toth, who basically provided all the animals for the early Disney Wilderness Family movies, that sort of thing. And he had, I can still remember going in one of his enclosures, and he had all these wolves that were black and partially black. Well, basically what they had to do was dye all these wolves for this movie, make them all black, which I thought was kind of amusing. But I walked through his yard, and he had two bear cubs, and he had them with two baby jaguars. And they were just buds. I mean, it was funny. I mean, it was like, and there they were, you know, these little bears didn't know any different. We've got an African serval cat that we walk right amongst the wolves, and the wolves look at it and don't care, and the serval cat doesn't care because they've been raised together, and, of course, they don't know any different. Let's put it that way. We haven't put any bad, I don't know what, word you would put instincts. My wife prefers to use the word karma into their thought process. And of course, as you know, animals can read you like a book. And
from a mile away.
Oh, and you know, and if, when you're having a bad day, they know it. When your thoughts aren't keen and alert, they know that as well. So it's very important. In fact, a lot of these times that people are injured by animals, it's not the person that raised the animal. It's not the person that trains the animal. It's the outsider, the person that maybe just visited and decided that, you know, I can do this, I can do that. And I think the prime example is a chimp attack up in Connecticut.
Right.
Because it wasn't the case. Of course, that's a whole different situation, that particular deal. Who are some of the people that people at home might know that you've worked with and sent cats to? Do you know any offhand there, Dennis?
Now say that again. I didn't catch that.
Who are some of the, I don't know, celebrities and big shots that you've
Mike Tyson. Yeah, those tigers for a while.
Who?
You know, and I think he finally got rid of those, and
Who was that? Who was that again?
Mike Tyson.
Oh, Mike Tyson. Oh, okay. All right.
A lot of them. Well, my friend Jim Witchie there, he's not around anymore, but he put those white tigers in the Cincinnati Zoo and gave Siegfried and Roy a start years ago. That's where I got my start of white too. But he used to talk to those celebrities, you know, it was an ego thing with them kind of, and he'd sell them a white cat for $100,000, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were so many things that went on like that. It was.
That's just crazy.
I don't know.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is.
That's beyond scope. Unbelievable, unbelievable. But if they've got a market for them, what can you do?
Yeah. So. That's been the problem. I mean, you know, it's like the ostrich. People thought they were going to get major rich on them, and everybody wanted to do it. And all of a sudden, you know, well, now there's, what, 10,000 tigers in Texas probably, and I don't know. I don't read the Animal Finders Guide. I hadn't gotten it for a long time, but another friend tells me you can get just about anything free out of there anymore, and that's a shame. It really is.
Well, the ostrich craze was just nuts. There's people that lost tens of thousands of dollars because they thought ostrich was going to be the next big chicken.
Right.
And they thought
the black African used to sell for $50,000 a pair.
Yes, yes. And then now I think if you went to an ostrich farm, they'd probably give you one.
Yeah, they give you one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? All that totally on the other side, that's not ever been what you and I have ever been about with these animals. It's just,
no.
You know, we have a passion and a deep passion for them. And
it's just, I know. It's just, it is a passion, absolutely. It's a passion. And you realize that when you look, it's kind of like when you go to the mountains and you look in the eyes of these animals, you realize you're just a big bunch of nothing. These things are so focused, and they have their role in the wild and their role in life, and we can learn a lot from those animals as far as what's important in life. Absolutely.
For sure.
Always thought that. It's quite an undertaking, and people don't understand. Right now, with the cats, how many cats did you say you had? Five right now?
Five, uh-huh.
What?
Yep.
People always ask me, says, how much meat does those cats eat? How much meat do you go through a week?
Well, realistically, a full-grown tiger requires at least 10 pounds a day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and realistically, there's days that I give mine 40 pounds a day, you know, but it, on the average, you know, on an average, they get 15 a day. And, you know, if I get a roadkill, a deer, you know, I'll split that up. Or sometimes I've even given them whole deer, you know.
Right.
But, you know, 12, 15 pounds a day of a turkey, I mean, they stay nice and fat and slick and coats look good and everything.
Well, that's people can do the math on their own at home. You're looking at several hundred pounds of meat a week. I know that's
yes.
That's
five cats, just 10 pounds. That's 50 pounds a day. That's 350 pounds a week.
Yep.
You know, and that price can vary anywhere from 15 to 35 cents a pound, so.
Yes,
you know.
It'd be quite a financial responsibility.
It
so
sure can
future,
be.
What does the future hold for Dentisil? What do you got going on down the road?
Well, basically, I'm trying to raise a few golden tabbies.
Yeah, tiger.
Yeah, golden
yeah.
tabby tigers. I don't plan on putting a lot of them out in the world, not by a long ways, and never have, you know. Just basically trying to generate something with them. me and my girlfriend Michelle, that's came in the picture for a good while now, we've got an idea that we're going to take posters and let these cats walk on them and make murals and try to pass those about.
Kind of like the elephant thing.
Right, right, something like that. And really, that's just about it. I mean, I'm keeping everything just basically a private collection, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just in that sense, I mean, I don't need 50 cats, you know.
Oh, right.
actually, in reality, they're all our significant others is what they are. You know, I mean, they're our significant others, and that's just it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't take them out. We don't subject them to stress in that respect, and it's just a happy little family is pretty much what it is, you know.
Right.
They
own us. Do you have
and they own us.
They own us.
You might tell everyone your blog, your website. They'd like to go to that.
Okay. I do have a lots of tiger pictures that you won't believe, and it's on myspace.com/DINISHILL. That's Dennis Hill. myspace.com/Dennis Hill. And there's lots of pictures. I mean, you know, we've done Make-A-Wish Foundation. We try to, sometimes if we have kittens, we take them to special needs people. And, you know, the thing about putting a baby tiger in a person's lap like that, I mean, it just, it breathes more life into them.
All right.
It's just something that's meant to be.
Well, I know I've always said, not unless a person's had a chance to look one in the eye or get that, I don't know if the word close exposure is correct, but it's going to give them a reason to want to save them in the wild, and it's going to want to give them the reason to not endorse products such as the deforestation of India and throughout Indonesia and Asia, where these animals are living in the wild, and they're basically, those forests are being destroyed for lawn furniture, and people have no idea what's involved with that. But it's very complicated, and anytime you can have a chance to investigate and look into some of these products that we use and think nothing about it, realizing that in the long run, basically destroying this planet, and the Amazon River Basin is a good example of that, what's gone on there the last 2 years, and of course Indonesia, Southeast Asia, and the other world, parts of the world where deforestation is basically destroying a home, not only for tigers, but a variety of other animals, and even animals that have yet to be discovered, and that's what's really sad about it. Dennis, we want to thank you for being on the program. Sorry about the little mix-up on the start, but you're a great guest.
Hey,
I hope all things goes well. And good luck
with
the Tigers. Good luck with your music. And it's great to have you on. We want to remind everyone that next week on the program, Dr. Kurt Voley, he's the director, he's the head vet at the Buffalo Zoo. And we'll be talking to him about the activities going on at the Buffalo Zoo and also his recent trips to Mongolia. Lots of great shows coming up. We appreciate you listening. This is Larry Batson, and you've listened to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in it again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.